Thank you, Colin, for proving that not all politicians are like the ones we're seeing in the press lately over in Ottawa, and for the tips that you gave tonight. I'm now going to introduce Amy Watson. Amy is an herbalist, and during her studies and studies of herbalism, she developed a passion for and a realization of the power of plants, and found a way to start working with the Glen Valley Organic Farm Cooperative Community in the Fraser Valley here. That's where she expanded her understanding of what sustainability was about and discovered the beauty of food and the value of farmers. Amy is now a woman on a mission, and her mission is to raise awareness about our current food system. She also works for the Glorious Garnish and Seasonal Salad Company at the Fraser Common Farm Cooperative, which is an organic farm in Aldergrove, and she works for Farm Folk City Folk, coordinating their farm tours. And I'm very pleased to introduce Amy Watson.
Wow. Thanks, Tara. I realized tonight that writing a speech is kind of like farming. You get all your things lined up and you get it ready, and then you get out there and you go, maybe I'll do it this way or maybe I'll do it that way. And so I'm actually going to do something a little different to start off than I originally planned, and I'm going to do the whole speech organically. So bear with me here. Speak up. It's just not being close enough to the mic. Is that better? Hello? Hello? I became an organic farmer mainly with realizing that action is our greatest form of activism. When we can put our hands in the ground, when you have a passion for something and you put your hands in the ground and you grow food and you realize that you have power over that, and you go into the grocery store and you think, geez, where did this come from? Who grew it? What is this entity? It's really disempowering. So I became an organic farmer for action. And so the first thing I'm going to do tonight is I'm going to give you guys a bunch of seeds from our farm. They're Scarlet Runner seeds, and you're going to have to share them because I didn't bring enough for everybody. They have been on our farm for about 5 years, and we've been breeding them for stringlessness and for diversity. They're a seed that you can't really find in seed catalogs anymore. So organic farmers are really great for that, having weird and different seeds. So this is for you guys.
Start at this end. Open the bag.
They haven't been husked either, so please get a little dirty with this one. So now I'm going to go to the prepared speech and see how well it goes. So the ideology carrying the science forward and the management of genetic engineering has a great concern for me as a farmer, a consumer, and especially as an eater. The idea of being able to splice genes and recreate a substance, essentially creating a new species to meet our designated choices, is a science that has changed the world forever. To assume that we know the evolutionary path of such species and determine that it is safe while allowing people to commercially produce it and own it has changed the world, and we have started playing the most dangerous game with nature ever. In the 3 years I've been farming, I've just begun to witness the movements of nature and understand the interplays of all the elements that are factored into producing food. This is merely preschool in the life of a farmer. The knowledge I found in books, hold on, this is when the seed doesn't quite germinate. There's plenty of knowledge, studies, facts, and stats about how and when to plant. The knowledge I found in these books have, however, paled in comparison to spending 3 seasons watching, listening, and being with the land. If anyone has visited several farms, they will notice that every farmer has knowledge, ideas, and gadgets that no one else did. The experience and relationship of farmers develop with nature is fundamentally the foundation of agriculture. Don't get me wrong, I do not discount the study of nature, agriculture of the elements. I do discount the notion that farming can be so clear-cut, black and white, that we deem the recreating of a species safe and furthermore allow someone to own it and yet not bear the responsibility for the path of that new species. I recall one of the first agricultural conventions I went to. I was walking around, a woman asked me if I wanted to try out a new computer program that helped predict the weather. You stick this Doppler-like device in the ground. When I asked her how much it cost, she said about $900. And I said, well, what are the guarantees on that? And she said, well, you know, like the meteorologist, no one can ever really tell. I realized then that the key to being a great farmer is paying attention to the elements. No matter how much technology we invent to create a perfect world that meets all of our needs, the elements will always play a role we cannot predict. The three main crops that are in commercial production in Canada are open pollinated, meaning they're genetic traits that cross with others in their family through wind, bees, and birds, and other things, tractors, combines, as Percy has seen. Canola, the most abundant and rampant of genetic engineering crops, has obviously wreaked havoc with farmers already. The family canola belongs to is the brassica family, which is 70% of the greens we grow on our farm in Aldergrove. This family is home to Brussels sprouts, broccoli, cabbage, arugula, turnips. It's one of the biggest families that our vegetables come from. What this means is that currently there is no way of knowing that our food is not contaminated. And we talked about the buffer zones. They really don't do anything. They create some kind of fake sense of security, of knowing that this is what nature's going to do, and it will because we said so. We're so arrogant. As an organic farmer, if any genetic engineered traits are found on our farm, we lose certification automatically. I was recently at a debate with Ken Green from the Fraser Institute, and when I said that as part of our reason, he said, well, why don't you just change the regulations so that, you know, as long as it doesn't leave your property, you don't lose your certification. And I realized right then and there that the people that are supportive of and working with the ideals of genetic engineering are not working with the same ideals that we work with when we set our digging forks into the ground. The farmers have created the standards of organic status with the purpose of supporting land, soil, and air. We do not support genetic engineering for the fundamental reason that it causes harm and it can destroy an ecosystem. I do not want GMOs on my land. I do not want it in my food. I don't want it in the trees and the shade in the trees that shade the neighboring property. I don't want it in the fish. No, Sam, I do not want GMOs, no matter the outlining plan. There are many concerns when one evaluates genetic engineering. The idea that creating a new species is safe for human consumption and will fit in with the evolutionary process of nature without rebuttal is merely a drop in the bucket. As humans, our ideas and curiosity encourage evolution. Our intentions and actions bring them to life. It is then that we see what the impact may be. As we evaluate research and talk about the future of genetic engineering, I wonder, how manipulative can we get with nature and have a constructive relationship with it? Thousands of years ago, humans made a shift in thought around food. Instead of hunting and gathering food, we marveled the idea to settle and cultivate land. The shift moved food away from the basic human right that it was to a place of asset. To producing a commodity, creating income, essentially began the culture of commerce and trade. The predominant effect of this shift has been to change our approach to food from that of one for nurturing to that of a market-driven perspective, making the bottom line commerce. Many argue that as we made this cultural shift, there were benefits as well as detriments. I obviously have benefited by choosing the life of an organic farmer. I cultivate the land every day. However, I did not choose this lifestyle for the career. I chose this lifestyle simply because I wanted to guarantee myself that I knew what was in my food, where it was coming from, and that I was being an active person in a change I saw was needed. Honestly and ideally, food would be produced for my personal consumption and as an essential need for my community. Currently, food production, distribution, and aid has one bottom line: how cheap can we go? The ideals that are founding the move forward of genetic engineering are the same ideals that have caused world hunger, cancer-causing residues on foods that should be healthy, obesity, skyrocketing diabetes, and for the first time ever, the same amount of people that are overnourished in the world to the same amount of people that are undernourished in the world. Corporations such as Monsanto and Cargill claim that their work is for humanitarian reasons. They claim, we need this technology to enhance taste and quality, speed maturation time, increase nutrients and yields, and overall improvement of plant productivity to meet our needs. When I mentioned that the ideology was an issue, I was referring to the notion that we currently face, that what we currently face in the world is a food crisis. This is actually caused by the same thinking we are using to promote the use of genetic engineering. Our issues of hunger are not from a lack of food, but from a corporately run distribution system. In fact, the world's farmer produced 4.3 pounds of food per person per day. Out of 830 million people that do not have access to food, one-third live in India, where in 2000, 60 million tons of grain were left to rot in the granaries. Cargill owned the seed. 78% of the world's malnourished children live in countries where there is a food surplus. The notion we can alleviate world hunger by producing more food is a band-aid, not a solution to the issue. So far, the genetic engineered crops commercially being produced are 70% for feed in factory farms, and the rest in food, or better part, fake food. Soy and canola, you're looking at donuts, chips, all the fillers that we need for the packaged foods we buy on our shelves. That's what genetic engineering food is going into. Out of 308 test plots, one was for nutritional change, and it failed. So what really are the intentions? There's a fabulous book by Jeremy Rifkin called The Biotech Century, and in it, he answers that question pretty good. The intentions, generally increasing commercialization of the genes pool. Food security is a hot topic. Who really owns and controls the food supply? In grain, five corporations control the market. Monsanto and Cargill are at the head of the table of that one. Most recently, 40% of the vegetable seed market is owned by Seminis, a company that is actively interested in genetic engineering. Basically, what it comes down to is that these corporations have a legal mandate to make money for their shareholders. That is their responsibility. The responsibility to the people is nothing. So any of the health concerns, as Percy has shown, is not part of their interest. So this needs to be something that is put to the people, and the people need to act on it. I did say that I was going to mention the technology agreements. I have a write-out here from a great package called The Farmer's Guide to GMOs. It was an American publication, and it writes all the information basically about what farmers face with GMOs. These are some of the things that are in the technology agreement basically does for farmers. They have no opportunity or rights to negotiate the terms of the agreement, and it's required to be signed. This is what you have to sign when you start using Monsanto seed or a genetically engineered seed. The farmers accept all terms and responsibility of the agreement by opening the bag, not even necessarily signing it. They open the bag, they've agreed to this agreement. Farmers may be required to settle all legal disputes concerning Monsanto in their headquarters, which is in St. Louis, Missouri. Farmers signing this agreement have agreed to have all their rights under the Federal Privacy Act waived. Farmers cannot save any seed or provide any seeds to others. Farmers must allow Monsanto full access to their records and invoices for all seed and chemical transactions, and allow Monsanto to copy any relevant receipts and documents. And there is no sunset time or a sunset or time limit on this contract. Monsanto can review a farmer's documents, fields, and crops even after the farmer has stopped growing Monsanto seeds. It goes on and on. As well, this is the most insane part about it. Farmers are completely liable for any causes that are negligible that happen with this seed. They don't own or have any profit necessarily from it, but they are directly responsible to any health concerns that happen with it. So, yeah, genetic engineering is definitely not something that organic farmers support, predominantly for the biodiversity, because the whole methodology of it is taking food away from the people. It's putting it into corporate hands. You have to know where your food comes from. You have to grow your food to do that now. Where are we going with this? This is essentially the worst thing we've ever, you know, kind of sat back and taken, and now we're not going to. So I applaud everybody that's here, and thank you for your patience with my organic speech. And if you want any information on any of this, there's loads of it out there. Thank you.